Right, that's correct.
Okay, it looks like we have a quorum, so let us begin. Okay. Ladies and gentlemen, we will call to order the September meeting of the Alexandria Transportation Commission. And we will start off with the public comment period. If there is anyone that wishes to make a public statement, please sign the form that's down on the end. And if you could restrict your comments to 3 minutes, we would certainly appreciate that. Did you sign in?
I have not signed in.
Okay.
Should I speak?
If you could let us know your name and address, and let me know when you're ready to begin, and we'll...
Okay. Yeah, I'll be relatively brief. My name is Dan Beattie. I live at 405 West Windsor Avenue. And I wanted to talk to you tonight about the traffic markings at the intersection of Windsor and Russell Road. It's an area I think most of you are probably familiar with because Russell's a major street. And as you know, a lot of actions have been taken across Russell Road at traffic calming. So I've got two interrelated issues. Recently, there's been repaving of Russell Road. And as traffic markings have been replaced onto the repaved Russell Road, the intersection where Windsor crosses Russell has been a little haphazardly remarked as far as a crosswalk. I'm not sure and hopefully I'll say this too, I don't know enough about city government, but I'm assuming I'm at the right place to talk about this. So should I continue?
Well, we can certainly pass the information on to the correct people within the city that could address the issue.
Okay.
But the commission in itself is not the one that would do that. But
not
please,
the commission, but you guys oversee transportation, environmental services.
We provide guidance and direction to the city based on the implementation of the city's transportation master plan. But any safety-related issue, I think I can safely say, is an issue that we would like to hear about.
I think it's definitely a safety issue. As you know, that intersection is adjacent to an elementary school, St. Stephen's Lower School. It's also used by a lot of GED middle school students, including my two sons, when they leave home and sometimes either skateboard or ride their bikes to GW. And so it's in that spirit that I just want to make sure that intersection, which is a pretty major crossing for a lot of people from Braddock Heights, Jefferson Park, over into Delray, is adequately marked. It's also on a blind curve if you're going eastbound on Windsor Avenue across Russell. You deal with a corner coming on St. Stephen's, and it's pretty often trying to get out of there. You can have someone coming around relatively fast. As a matter of fact, I would argue that somebody who supports what you're trying to do with Vision Zero and Complete Streets, I think there's some good efforts that the commission's undertaken. This is an area of Russell Road that could use a little bit of attention. Related to that, and then that will complete my statement, I would argue that on Windsor Avenue, on West Windsor, when you're immediately west of Russell Road, for a long time, that was a sort of a connector up to Braddock Road for the old Windsor Firehouse. And during the years where that was still an active fire station, there were a lot of trucks that would come up, I understood it. But as a result, they laid down, and for some reason, just on the 200 and 300 block of Russell and 400 block of Windsor Avenue, they've got a double stripe. And I think the message that's sent to drivers in that area is that somehow this is no longer a residential street. My son recently pulled out, he has a baseball gun to time pitches, and he clocked somebody going 61 miles an hour at 3 o'clock in the afternoon with an average speed. This is a little experiment for a GW project last spring. He had an average speed of over 35 miles an hour on a 25 mile an hour street. So I just wanted to raise these issues tonight. Again, I may not be exactly in the right venue, but I figure you might be able to pass these things along because some of the principles are consistent with what I understood from the website the commission pays attention to, which is pedestrian safety.
Yes.
So thank you.
Ramiro, I'll ask you if you wouldn't mind passing this on to, at least with respect to the traffic markings of Windsor and Russell, to the appropriate person within transportation.
Sure.
And also if you could pass a message on to Chief Brown and his team that this might be an area for some targeted enforcement, as the city has a robust targeted enforcement program to ensure drivers are complying with the posted speed limit. This may be an opportunity for his team to better deal with traffic issues. So, thank you very much.
I appreciate your attention tonight. Yeah. Thanks.
Mr. Chairman, if so, I might, if you don't mind.
Please. This is Jan Lambert.
Yeah, I'm Jan Lambert.
He's the director of transportation.
Transportation Environmental Services. Thank you very much for your comments. Yeah. As the chair mentioned, we'll certainly make sure that we pass them on to staff. Do want to make sure to point out that as part of the resurfacing project, we have made a number of changes on Russell Road, a number of new markings. Staff is also currently looking at that particular intersection to make future improvements. In the real world, we do things, we do all this work and then we resurface. It doesn't always work quite in that coordinated of a fashion, but I would say in this case, we have done quite a bit of outreach with residents along Russell and Windsor, and there are more improvements scheduled to come. So I just want to be clear.
Thank you for that update, and I appreciate the follow-up.
Okay. Sure. Yeah, thank you for sharing the information.
Okay, and I'll sign in on the way out.
Please.
Okay.
Thanks. Okay. Is there anyone that wishes to make a statement during the public comment period? Having no others, we will close the public comment period and move to the review and approval of the minutes from the July 18th, 2018 meeting. Does anyone have any corrections or changes to the minutes that have been presented in our package? Okay. Do I have a motion to approve the minutes as presented?
I'll make a motion to approve the minutes presented.
Do I have a second?
I'll second.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay. Motion carries. The minutes have been adopted as presented. For the consent consent items on the agenda, are there any commissioners that wish to have the staff provide any more information than what appears in our packages on the consent package? Appears that that's satisfactory.
I have a question specifically about that. Maybe this must be the transportation master plan update. Is there like significant planning for happening for autonomous vehicles and those kinds of things, all those technologies? Like, what's kind of get an idea about what's being done?
So there are several fronts in which we are going to address those issues. One is in the curbside management chapter, which would come in a later phase, in phase two of the update, and also on a chapter that will be called smart mobility. So yes, we'll be addressing those.
And then I have just one question. Have you guys come up with another acronym for the sustainable urban mobility?
So that is not some.
So the latest we have is Alexander Mobility Plan. And
That's good. That's
bad. That has a bit more pizzazz than some.
it's shorter, more manageable.
We're still working on marketing
acronym,
around that.
But the name has been shortened significantly. Thank you for asking.
I had a question about the Route 1 speed limit reduction, and just curious as to, I'm glad it's happened, and I think drivers will quickly acclimate, but I'm curious, the speed limit on the mainline boulevard that runs parallel, is that already 25? It is. Okay, that's what I thought. I was just checking to make sure people wouldn't, you know. I go that way to save time when I do drive, but I was just curious as to, you know, if cars would divert from one. And sometimes they do just because of traffic, not because of necessary speed limit. Thank you.
Has there been any feedback yet on how close cars are actually obtained 25 miles an hour?
We have not done after data collection yet.
Yeah. But it will be done.
Yes.
I knew that. I just wondered if any stuff.
Chair, I just want to ask a clarifying question on, so we've received a consent update with city manager budget guidance in the letter. As staff require any input through our liaison by October 26, is this something where we should, are we going to talk about it in October as a commission? Do we want to solicit feedback from commissioners offline that we consolidate in order to meet their schedule? I'm wondering if you had any thoughts on process for that.
And Mr. Chair, if I might.
I would say if any staff have any.
We have received budget guidance. We typically receive budget guidance annually from the Transportation Commission. We have modified how the guidance comes over the past couple of years. As you are both aware, I have met with chairs and vice chairs of all the TNES commissions informally to provide you with some early input on what we're looking at for future budget cycles. As I mentioned in my email to you, I'm happy to do so again. And actually, we are going to be sending it. Just if you all are interested, we're probably going to schedule something if you want to attend. If you do not, that's perfectly fine. I think what staff would be looking for from in this case would be that if you have any specific guidance for us, it would be to docket this in October. If commissioners have specific guidance or input on these, we would like for you to discuss those and share those offline prior to the next meeting. And then at the next meeting, we can craft something from you all that could come to us, which we could then share with the manager. Alternatively, we can have a conversation, and I'm happy to provide that input. We're really trying to make it as convenient and as expedient as we can for you all. But it's the pleasure of the commission, what you all would most prefer.
Are there any concerns or a particular process that any of the commissioners would like to see used here to do that? Well, whatever information you may have available, if we can be sent that in advance of the October meeting so that we would have an opportunity to take a look at it and then provide staff with input.
So the information that you have now, and I want to make sure that I also clarify, City Council does not provide its budget guidance to the city manager until early November. So the thinking here is that if you as a commission have answers to the three questions that are here that you want us to relay to council in the retreat and that you want council to consider as part of its guidance, we'd like to hear that now. We will be back in front of you multiple times.
You feed it to the manager, and the manager feeds it to council
exactly.
in that venue.
Exactly. And there are multiple opportunities for you within the process to provide us with input. And then as you always do annually, once the manager's budget comes out, if you have specific concerns, we will always bring that back to you. You can then, as you always do, you give us a letter that sort of gives us your input on the actual manager's proposal.
So this would come, this is not the letter input on the manager's proposal, but it could come in whatever form we're comfortable with.
Correct. Yeah. This is simply the commission's responses to these three questions.
Yep.
It's not the annual, we like what you did to this part of the budget, Mr. City Manager, we don't like what you did to this part. It's early in the process, are there some things that you want the manager and council to be thinking about? We never get answers to question number two here. No one can ever tell us what they don't like, and that's we understand. But hey, if you have something, we'd love to hear it. And then again, additional resources if you have.
So, in light of that, are you then providing answers to that question, or is that just an exercise for Mr. Jinks to send everybody and have everybody just ignore it?
I'm not sure I follow.
Well, so the question is, if your area of the budget is required to identify potential reductions, what are the lowest priority services? So you get no input from us, but are you then providing input?
Yes, the city manager is always provides a budget to council, and as we are required to do, city manager presents a budget proposal in which we will prioritize, and then council react to, you all react to it annually as well. So
there will always be low priorities.
Right.
And there will be things that are less, that are unfunded.
So should we then take ownership of that, though, to provide feedback to you? Or is that, I haven't done it before, so I'm asking kind of as the new guy here in this exercise.
Yeah, it's a great question. Again, this is your opportunity early in the process. If you want to tell us, and I'm just going to throw this out there, Casey, if you think that we should fund, the city should look for, treat sewers as a lower priority, and you want us to put more money into Dash, I'm just looking at Steve, so that, yes, if you have that input to us, we're happy to take it and share that with council. No, we're going to make
all recommendations are, I'm sure, are very well considered by the city manager. Well, why don't we do this? A week before the October meeting, if you would like to send, I'll say to Romero, who can then send it to me, and maybe I can sort of chunk them into categories, and we might have a straw man of a document to take a look at as we try to identify the input from with respect to the three questions that the city manager is looking for. We would have hopefully a consolidated response package to move forward. Yes.
One thing that occurs to me is that third question is an important one and something to think about because, for example, if we can get the state legislature to change the funding package, the metro funding package, then we could, and NBTA gets back the money it used to have, then that's good news for the BRT and the West End. And so that's a state where we need the help from the state legislature in order for us to free up those, to get the resources back.
Thank you. That's really important point to make as an opportunity to mention here.
It should all be exploited for maximum return. Okay, so again, if we could get any of your input on any of these three areas to Romero, and we can try to put together a consolidated list to speak to at the October meeting, I think that might be a good strategy here. All right. Are there any other items within the consent agenda that we need to discuss? Are we ready to move on to the next? Okay, I think we have accomplished that. Commission updates. Vice Chair, would you like to go first?
I have no updates for the transportation.
Okay, well, that's okay, too.
the Planning Commission approved the Route 1 South Long Range Plan. I think the only major change was they changed the name.
South Patrick?
I think it was South Patrick Street strategy instead of Route 1 South to give it a more localized feeling. But Commissioner McMahon had a nice, very thoughtful memorandum that was shared with the Planning Commission. I'm sure it went up to the council as well, which, if memory serves correctly, they approved it last Saturday.
Yep.
So we're good to go on that.
Yay.
Good. Thank you.
Well, I should mention that there were some concerns of citizens who thought that the additional development that was being proposed could create a problem in the long run, but everyone on the commission felt that the strategy of this being the only and best way to economically achieve affordable housing goals outweighed that concern. And that's where we are.
Thank you. Commissioner Kubik.
Yes, on this past Monday, the Landmark Van Dorn, Landmark Eisenhower West Van Dorn Implementation Advisory Group, my tongue twister today, we met on Monday at, to get kind of a pretty decent update. There were transportation elements of the update this time around. The cost of the West End Transitway right now is estimated to be about $70 million for what they have in mind. There's been some planning done for the Backlick Run multi-use trail. It's going to be done in two sections, one east and one west, the dividing line being Van Dorn Street under the bridge. There's been some money, $7 million in smart scale funds for design and construction has been granted for that project, so that's kind of moving along. That'll also have some stream restoration, and the length of the trail will be 2,300 feet, and it'll be 15 feet wide. There were also other parts talking about, obviously, Landmark Mall is now going to be replanned. That whole process is kind of beginning again. I'll be updating the commission as that progresses. However, so far, yeah, there's some smart scale funds that have been granted to implement transit access and pedestrian bicycle improvements. So we'll wait for that to happen. They want to increase permeability and connectivity to the surrounding neighborhoods of the mall, naturally, because right now it's kind of an island. There have been some spot improvements made down on the West End, Van Dorn and Eisenhower, Van Dorn, Edsel Road, and so on, like some intersections down there, like a lot better, actually, in my opinion, they're way better. When I first moved to the city, the intersection of Edsel and South Piggott was just, it was not good. Now there are curb cuts, and, you know, so it wasn't nice. And actually, I think the most significant update from this past Monday was a discussion of the multimodal bridge. The alignment is different than the original plan. The original plans entailed the bridge beginning on Cameron Station Boulevard and going up that berm that sits there behind the, at the end of the park. However, that didn't work for Norfolk Southern, and the bridge, the proposed bridge, has been moved a bit further west, kind of in the, you know, I guess we'll start in the middle of where that western bar is. And the cost of the bridge is $151 million right now. That's the estimated cost, without any calculation of escalation cost by the time it's built and so on. So how much, you know, this is how much it would cost to rebuild now. An interesting point was made by Dak Hardwick at the commission, or at the meeting, sorry, where he thought that was a very high price. And I understand why the bridge is expensive. It's because of the requirements from the railroad and kind of grade and those kinds of things. And he made an interesting suggestion, and I thought there's some, definitely something worth considering, and we as a commission can kind of think about as this kind of goes on. He thought that was far too expensive, and that it might be better to put that money into rehabbing and potentially widening Van Dorn instead. And it's an interesting proposal, considering that bridge could use it. It might be helpful. I'm not really encouraging anybody, you know, to believe that, think that this is the best thing, but just to consider it. I think it's a good idea. And that was pretty much it. So kind of those are the updates for the meeting. Those are the transportation-related updates.
Thank you. That remains a contentious project.
Yes.
Expensive project.
Very.
Yes. Commissioner Kane?
Yeah, the Traffic and Parking Board did not meet in August. We took the month off, so I have nothing to report on. Our next meeting will be next this coming Monday.
This coming Monday. Okay. Commissioner Gaskins?
I have no updates.
Okay. No updates.
Thank you, Commissioner Schroeder.
We had, the Environmental Policy Commission had our annual retreat on September 8th. It was a Saturday, full day. I think I'll be having details as we move along. I would say for that meeting, we covered what we were doing in the first, we did in the EAP, the Environmental Action Plan, for the this past year. We had half the chapters that we were updating, and then we did a kickoff for the next chapter, the next five chapters, and that includes transportation. So I think there's going to be quite a lot of things to cover this year. We broke up into groups, and I'm on the transportation one, and we're going to be putting forth some proposals of what we want the goals to be, and updating that plan. We did a quick presentation and had a lot of discussion regarding what we put forth. Right now, we had some updates to do on it, but the general idea was to focus on both the city fleets and how we could have energy efficiency and help contribute to the reduction of our risk to climate change. And then the other things were what to do with the efficiency with the public, and that might include trying to support energy efficiency, like, you know, having more electric cars and that sort of thing, but also reducing the number of single occupancy vehicle miles. So we're going to come up with some metrics for that. And then at the same time, the city put forth, I know Ramiro was involved in that, some staff recommendation, which was a lot more thorough, actually, than what the commission had put forth at that time. And we're reviewing those, and the city staff involved with transportation, probably including Jan and Ramiro, as well as some of the EPC members, are going to be meeting, I believe, in the next week, probably the 28th. And in between that, there will be another EPC meeting. So I think by the next time we meet, I'll have a lot more. I'd like to actually share and figure out maybe a process to include or keep the Transportation Commission updated other than just giving a blurb. I don't know if we'll be able to share the documents in advance and talk about it or just solicit your opinions on some of the proposals we're putting forth from the perspective of trying to have something that works with the master transportation plan updates as well as considering the environmental goals that we're trying to succeed.
I'll definitely look into how to work
to work out. Yeah. Okay, great. I think that's pretty
Thank
much
you.
In general.
Councilman Levine?
Nope.
From the last meeting, the meeting in July, I think I was asked a question with respect to Dash, the ridership on the T.C. Williams free ride project, and the counts for June during the week were 1,400 rides, and on the weekends it was roughly 380 and about 120, 125. So
that's daily.
These are daily rides, yes. So it's being, it was being used, and it has now expanded into other schools. So hopefully this will change the culture of the people who are participating in it to be more, less car friendly and more public transportation friendly. So it is being used. It continues not to tax the capacity of the DASH system. So while there's a cost associated with it, some people may argue there's no real cost because the buses are operating the same route and people are riding this and we're taking cars off the street for the parents that aren't dropping the people off and providing other opportunities. So all in all, it appears to be a success. Okay. And while I was going to cover it in other business, I'll put it on the table now. There's a PIMEG meeting next week, along with several other meetings going on through October and November. I'm currently serving in that capacity, but with my work schedule, it's becoming increasingly more challenging to make all these meetings. So I offer it to those who no longer, or those who don't have an assignment, which I'm looking at right now. why don't the two of you think about it, if you don't mind, and talk amongst yourselves, perhaps. This is the Potomac Yard project, as you know, one of those real under the radar, low level, no contentious issues.
No issues at all.
None at all. But the meetings are generally in the Recreation Center, and please help
Charles Houston.
Charles Houston Recreation Center, and I believe it's 6 to 8?
Yes, I can tell you in 2 seconds, because I'll...
6 to 8, I got it right here. Okay. I want to make sure I gave as accurate information as possible. So if you can let Ramiro know, and maybe whoever gets there first can have it, but I'll let you decide which may, either your backgrounds or strengths may sort of decide which person might be the best fit for that. But this way, at least we'll have someone assigned to that, and we'll be able to attend, hopefully on a more regular basis than I will be able to going forward. So thank you for your consideration on that. Okay, we have finished that. Item number 5, the Pilot Shared Mobility Program.
Okay, this is a really fun topic. And one that I know has been a discussion throughout Alexandria and across the region. Here to talk to you tonight about the state of shared mobility and what we're looking to do in Alexandria moving forward. So what are shared mobility devices? We call them SMDs because shared mobility device is very long. What we're talking about are the dockless bikes, the e-bikes, the scooters that you've likely seen in Arlington County, Montgomery County, and in the district. These are vehicles that are owned by private companies, and then they're made available for rent to the public via smartphone app. So most of them are intended for short trips, and these are stored in public spaces, meaning they're dockless. So unlike Capital Bike Share, where you dock it into a specific space, these are dockless. We are certainly already seeing them around Alexandria as well. So why are these popular? I mean, it's one of the goals of our of the city and our transportation master plan to provide options, more options for people to get around. These are really, it's a new and it's a fun way to get around. A lot of people are really enjoying this. It's providing more options. It's filling gaps in the bike share system where, you know, in Alexandria, there's a lot of our city that doesn't have access to bike share stations. They are more equitably distributed, and then they can follow the demand and where people want them to be. So both of the e-scooters and the e-bikes, they're easier to ride, particularly in hilly areas, and they make your trips shorter. So for people who are trying to access transit and it might take them 20 minutes to walk, maybe now it's a little bit faster. And it also helps people who don't want to drive and deal with parking. So those are just some of the reasons why they're popular. But there certainly are challenges. One of the things that, you know, a perceived challenge that we're hearing about a lot already from the community, is parking. So how people are parking these, are they impeding the pedestrian walkway on the sidewalk, or people parking them in places that are mostly sidewalk parking, but also, you know, are they kind of just dumping them on the sidewalks? Do they look like eyesores? They're bright colors, so we know how that can be in particular areas of Alexandria. So there are ways that people can report these to the companies, and the companies will come out and pick up the bikes and pick up the scooters. But one of the challenges is a responsiveness to the customers when the complaints are made. So like I mentioned, viewed as kind of clutter on the sidewalks. There's been concern that we've heard about the speeds, particularly for the e-bikes and the e-scooters. And if people are using these and they're going quicker than a normal bike, are they using them on sidewalks, and how do we manage that? And then there's the issue of data sharing and what information are we getting back from these companies. So right now, as of June 2018, there were 17 cities that were operating with permits, and this is from NACTA, the National Association of City Transportation Officials. They have actually put out guidelines for the regulation and management of these devices. So they've been doing a really great job of connecting cities, and so bike share managers and staff from all over the country have been sharing information about how these are, how the rollouts are going in the city, what they're learning, the lessons learned, what regulations they are understanding that they now need, what regulations they have changed from possibly in the beginning. There are certainly cities where some of these companies are coming and operating without permits. And so when they come and operate without permits, they're also not being regulated by the cities. So that's been an issue, and that's one of the reasons that NACTA has put out these guidelines, is to help cities understand, okay, if they're coming, be prepared, and here are some regulations, and here are some consistencies and ways that the cities can ask for the same type of information, and then it's easier to share data across jurisdictions. And then one of the other things that we're seeing nationally and also in our region is a shift from the conventional bikes to the e-bikes. So in DC, four companies that were just doing conventional, was it one four? Conventional bikes have now pulled out, and the e-bike company and the e-scooters are really the popular ones that seem to be sticking around. So regionally, about a year ago, Washington, D.C. and Montgomery County both began pilots. D.C. recently extended their pilot program, but they did learn some lessons, and they've changed their terms and conditions, and they are planning to make this permanent in D.C. There were some unpermitted rollouts in Arlington County with some of the scooters, and the county board is considering a pilot program on September 22nd in Arlington, and that would be a nine-month pilot. So this is really the important part of this, is that these companies can legally operate in the city of Alexandria. E-bikes and e-scooters are permitted. They're in the state code. People are allowed to use them. The city can provide oversight and regulations through permits for the companies, and we can prevent and remove unlawful obstructions when they are on the sidewalk. The city has the authority to do that, and then also charge the companies for this. But the important thing to note is that we cannot ban these companies from coming. They are coming, particularly in this region. We know that that's happening. We're already seeing them. So what the city wants to do is be proactive and come up with a set of regulations that is consistent with our regional partners, and make sure that as these companies come forward, that we are regulating them and managing them in a way that makes them work well for Alexandria. So the proposed process that we're looking to go through, this is on the docket for City Council to give a similar presentation to them in September on the 25th, so next Tuesday. Just basically to give them an update on the state of shared mobility and then the framework for the pilot program, and then kick off immediately about a month-long community engagement period. The city is planning to bring forward in October to council a pilot program with some regulations, but the engagement with the community would largely be education of the system and awareness that we want to move forward with this pilot program and why it's important to have the pilot program. And not just have these companies come in, because they are going to come in, and if we don't have permits in place and regulations in place, we're not going to get the data from them that we need. We're not going to get the safety information. we're not necessarily going to get the responsiveness to the customer service, and those are things that we can include in our memorandum of understanding with the companies and through our permit. So in October, we would like to come back to the commission for an endorsement of our pilot program, so we'll send out that information to you prior to the meeting, but we will be getting feedback on that program from the community. And then the City Council, I believe on October 23rd, would consider our proposed pilot program that would then roll out in November, and we would begin evaluation immediately. So in terms of the community engagement, we're looking for feedback on the proposed pilot program. We're looking at a community open house type format. This is something where we'd be able to answer questions, staff would be there to answer questions the community has about these devices, and we're actually reaching out to some of the companies to see if they would bring some of the devices. So it could be an outdoor event, people could try them out, ride them, talk to the vendors as well as staff to get information about how they're used. And we would also have an online survey to get input from as wide of a variety of people across the city as we can regarding the types of things that we might put in our permit or our MOU with the companies. And then for education and awareness, getting our city website up, making sure there's a lot of information, FAQs, that sort of thing, and then also pushing out the events through social media and e-news. So this is a quick process for community engagement, but we did want to make sure we're moving forward with this pilot as Arlington is considering theirs. We know we're going to see more and more of these vehicles in Alexandria, and we just want to be prepared and proactive. So some of the things we would look at with the pilot program, the framework, looking at what we're requiring with our permit. Are there fees? If there are for the companies, what are those fees? Is there a cap on the number of vehicles that each company can bring in? And if so, what is that cap? With the memorandum of understanding, what are our data sharing requirements? What are we asking them to provide to us? Requirement of safety devices on the vehicles, the requirements for customer service, the time that they need to respond to complaints that they hear, and then requirements for parking and storage of the vehicles. In terms of evaluation, there would be an evaluation that would be part of the pilot program that would basically lead into the final report at the end of the pilot that would go to City Council. We would be looking at usage data, not only the number of trips, but also seeing where the vehicles are going across Alexandria, where the demand is. We would be able to look at customer service and public feedback. We would be able to understand the types of complaints we're seeing for parking and storage of the devices and the provider compliance when there are those community complaints. We would do even more community engagement during this process. We would do online engagement, but also in-person surveys of people that are using them and how they like them and what are the challenges they're seeing. And then again, continuing to educate the community throughout this process. And then we would provide this information to City Council and a final report at the end of the pilot, and then that would enable them to make a recommendation of whether we formalize a process or a program to have a permanent system in place for these vehicles.
If I could just jump in, if you could go back to slides 15 and 16. So Hillary gave you an excellent overview of what we're grappling with right now. And we want to emphasize to you that our intent is to bring back to you a more detailed pilot in October, and we'll be asking for you to consider that pilot and make a recommendation to staff. You'll see more specific information prior to the October meeting. The gist of what we're asking you tonight is for high-level input on what you see here from the framework itself. Are we addressing the right things in your experience with these vehicles? Are there things that you want the city in particular to be prepared for, things you want us to be considering as we're pulling together what the pilot would look like? That's the type of input that we need to hear from you, that we're looking to hear from you tonight.
Commissioners, any questions?
I have some very elementary, basic questions because I I would like you to just explain to me from the point of view of a customer, an ignorant customer. I understand about bikes in docks. To get the bike out of an infrastructure dock, which is a fixed location, you have to generate a transaction with the company using that credit card or something. And that transaction goes on until the bike goes into either this dock again or some other dock somewhere else in the city. That I understand. I don't understand anything beyond that as to how this works. Tell me from the basic point of view, how does a customer interact if they want to pick up one of these things? Where do they find it? Can they go to point B and then to point C and then to point D? Leave the vehicle while they go into the store at point B and then come back and they're still on. Just explain to me how this works.
Okay. So these are app-based systems. So if you think about Uber, where you can go on and you've got your credit card linked to your account, so that's how you pay for it. But when you go on to your app, and I don't know if Melissa was pulling it up to show you, you can see where these vehicles are located. So because people don't have to leave them in a particular location, they show up on your map. So you could say, oh, hey, there's a bike right outside my house. I want to reserve that bike. You've got an account. You pay. There's different pay structures for the companies, but usually it's what up to. Some of them are by the minute. Some of them are up to half hour. I think it's a little different for the different companies. But you see, because all of these vehicles have GPS on them, so you actually see where they're located through the app. And then when you're done with your trip, you lock them down and you end your trip. And then somebody else can come and start a new trip with that device.
When you lock it down, is it immobile at that point then?
You need to have an app to get it. Essentially, units like have a little QR code on them, and you just put your camera up next to it, bang, and that's it.
And it has a wheel lock on it.
Well, they have different... The bicycles have wheel locks that will actually physically prevent it from rolling. The scooters just don't... the motors won't work. So you can... I've seen people foot pushing them to like roll down the street, which you could technically do with the scooter, but you wouldn't have any motor assist. So
and some of them have an alarm. So if you try and do that, it'll like make a really loud noise.
So our goal will be in part to limit the number by having this program. Any one company can only have X number of them, and they get to decide where they want to disperse them in the city.
Right, and because they have the information about where they're traveling and where they're getting left and where they, you know, if they know that a lot of them are ending up in the mornings at a metro station, similar to bike share, they're going to come and redistribute those vehicles based on the travel patterns that they're seeing on their end.
So if they decide, well, we're going to distribute 30 vehicles across the city, is it realistic to expect 3-6 months from now there'll still be 30 vehicles on the streets?
Well, they can go across jurisdictional borders. So it's not like the vehicle stops when you go into Arlington. So, I mean, without vandalism and theft, I mean, the hope is that, in theory, yes, they put 30 down, and 6 months, there's 30 still out there, but...
But they're going to, what, one of the points that we're looking at with the pilot is that they have to report to us, they have to show us the number of vehicles themselves, mm-hmm. and how many are actually operating in the city. And
but the whole concept here is that these things are have no utility for a thief.
Right. Yes, okay. Correct. You can't just grab one and roll. You have to...
They have utility if you want to vandalize. So if you want to throw it into the river...
Yeah.
Yeah. The level of satisfaction,
right.
Perhaps.
Or throw it into a tree.
Thank you. I'm just not well briefed on this.
Well, when we have our open house, you should come and try them out.
Test one out.
Trying
Commissioner Gaskins?
So I have a comment and a question. I love the framework. I think it's really comprehensive. I would encourage you, as you think about the community engagement process, I know it's condensed, but in addition to the community open house, could there maybe be, like, I don't know, some pop-up conversations or things in areas that you think are going to be more high traffic, like Delray or near Potomac Yard or Old Town, mm-hmm. just so there are other touch points across the city to engage? And then the other question I was going to ask, you mentioned that DC learned some really important lessons and that they had to change some of their terms and conditions. What were some of the takeaways you guys took from there, or how's that reflected in your framework?
So DC initially, I'm not sure what their initial cap on vehicles was.
I actually don't think
400.
I think it was a very high number.
It was high.
Right.
I think one of the things DC saw was that they were just everywhere, and so putting a cap on can be helpful.
Yeah.
I think they looked at should we require a lock to? So some of the bikes can be have the mechanism that they can actually be locked to something. I think there's pros and cons with that, because if somebody locks it to something, we can't just come up and like move it off the
right.
You know, off the middle of the sidewalk if they lock it somewhere and are blocking a path. So there's pros and cons of that. I
think one of the other great lessons from DC, and I'm sorry if I, is that this,
so
these vehicles have been additive to Capital Bike Share. So there have been lots of, we've gotten lots of questions already, right? If we have these, do we need to have Capital Bike Share? And obviously it's something that we need to track very closely over the next several years as people's transportation habits and change. But what DC has seen in their short time is that these vehicles have been very useful in parts of the city that do not have as many Capital Bike Share stations. And that's been useful for folks to as additive to the system.
That was probably the best. I think there was something in Greater Washington, but that was the thing that I think made me feel a little better about
right.
them. But the article talked about how, especially in areas where, you know, the Capital Bike Share stops and you're further to go, maybe Anacostia or deeper into DC, it's a great way for you to then continue your transit access on, and that they're seeing the bikes go into more low-income neighborhoods than the others.
Right, because there's formulas for how bike share is distributed in terms of retail and different things like that, jobs, and so that's one thing I see when I'm in DC too, is that you're seeing people riding bikes in areas where you weren't seeing it before, and I think it's just making it's much more equitable.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
One thing that occurred to me as you talked here is how critical it is to work closely with Arlington, because you're not getting devices coming across the river, but they're going to be going all over between Alexander and Arlington. And if they get off in some tangent different from us, and it could really be. So I'm sure you're doing that, but I think that's awfully important.
Very closely with Arlington.
I can speak to that a little bit, because Arlington is just a couple, like a month ahead, essentially, on rolling out its pilot. And Arlington held a vendor meeting, which was really helpful, inviting the potential companies in to talk about what's feasible for them, what are they currently doing vis-a-vis the safety features of these vehicles, their speeds, and that sort of thing. And Alexandria was actually at that vendor meeting to listen to their answers and to contribute questions and stuff as well. So we've been working really hard to make sure that the two are pieced together.
I think just then as you're looking at the system, we had a rollout last week where the vendor was actually distributing. When we went to them and said, please don't, not yet, right? We are looking at a pilot, but as you can see, people are using them. These are the vehicles in Alexandria right now, and it's not a small number, right? So
that's just one vendor?
Yeah, that's Bert.
Commissioner Marsh.
I have a question just in terms of the Virginia state law. And I know I've been trying, my day job, I've been trying to get, we have a very cool a cargo e-bike we've been trying to roll out in New York State, New York City. And I've been studying a lot about e-bikes, and I know there are different classifications. There's a class 1, 2, and 3. And class 1 are the safer, you know, under 20 miles per hour, it's under 750 watts. And I'm just curious, does Virginia law differentiate, and are we just talking about I know that, you know, all these different bike share programs are starting to roll out the e-bikes, like you said, you're seeing this shift now. We're just talking about class 1, you know, like,
essentially.
I mean, something we need
the code all printed on my desk. I probably
okay.
brought them so Virginia law recognizes pedal electric assist bicycles but it does not actually have a class or level 1, level 2, level 3 language in it that
it
I'm aware of.
It describes the motor.
Yeah, it's
okay.
Like up to 750 watts,
yep.
I think, is what it allows.
Okay.
Yep.
And then 20 miles an hour
speed,
is the speed limit.
Yeah.
Okay, I just ask you, you know, make sure you're,
The industry language that you're speaking of has not been directly correlated or translated into the
okay.
code.
And then I have a second question, and D.C. obviously deals with, in terms of federal jurisdiction and where there's federal law, and I know the GW Parkway is such a major commuter route. I'm just curious, are there any laws about using e-bikes or on federal land like that or on the Park Service land? Curious, something to consider.
So what,
I don't think they're allowed on the trail.
So what we have heard from the Park Service is that they're not allowed on the trail, and that but that they are not going to be enforcing.
And they're not allowed on the trails in Arlington either. I don't know what would happen if you tried to ride one of these things on the actual parkway, because these are low speed vehicles.
Right.
So it wouldn't be wise if you can't go faster than 20 miles an hour to be on a road that's controlled access like that.
Yeah, it's just a Mount Vernon trail. I meant Mount Vernon trail.
So it's just like
the parkway
itself.
Answer for the trail is that technically that they are not allowed, but they're not enforcing.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you.
Commissioner King.
Yeah, I have several questions. I think this is a great program. However, on Saturday I was in Arlington and was observing the scooters, and they weren't just on the sidewalk; they're out on the streets, and they're just really kind of darting in and out of everywhere. And we've already got issues with citizens upset with bicyclists who don't have motorized assist moving around. And so I think one of the pieces that really somehow needs to be addressed, because I'm sure it's going to show up in either the open house or at public hearings, is how we really are going to deal with kind of the enforcement of some traffic laws associated with these. So if the police aren't part of this, I would recommend that the second is that I think that you indicated that in the October there would be a public hearing as part of the Transportation Commission meeting, which again I think is a great idea, but I would propose that we change the venue for that, because I would expect that that's going to be a large crowd, and so this room may not be as accommodating as City Council, so I don't know if that would be a City Council room would be available that evening, but it might be worth considering that in anticipation of a larger than usual crowd for people who are either very much opposed to this program and to do anything possible to stop it versus those who were likely to be very much in favor of extending this. As part of the pilot program, you indicated that you do this evaluation and make recommendations to City Council, yet you also said there's really nothing we can do to stop these people. So I get the idea of doing the pilot program, and I get the idea of a recommendation, but if these vendors don't like anything that you've done, they can just tell you to go pound sand and do what they want. Is that correct? Or are they really wanting to work with jurisdictions?
The vendors want to work with jurisdictions, and when regulations and very clear regulations are in place, I think they appreciate that, and they're willing to work with jurisdictions. So the final recommendation to council would be things that we learned during the pilot, and if there are tweaks to our permitting, our MOU with the companies. But the companies have been willing to work with cities.
I'm glad to hear that. And then,
can I ask a quick follow-up that relates to that? Because one of the questions I wrote down was what's the nature of a permit program if you can't revoke the permit? Can you revoke? I mean, once you have a permit program in place, will Alexandria be able to revoke those permits and prevent them from operating?
Well, we'll be able. So again, the state law gives us the ability to regulate our right of way.
Okay.
So this permit is going to be an operating agreement between us and the vendors. And it'll really is what it really enables them. It permits them to distribute and redistribute the vehicles around the city.
Mm-hmm.
What we're not going to be able to prevent is people taking them from Arlington or Fairfax, and that's what we're not going to be able to prevent. So
mm-hmm.
we would, in essence, council could determine at a certain, we could get lots of negative feedback, and council could ultimately tell us we don't want a permit, or we want to issue a very small number of permits, or
mm-hmm.
That could be the number.
Right.
Controlling what that number may, what ultimately ends up here is going to be a huge challenge. I think from staff's perspective, what we feel is that, to sort of elaborate on what Hillary said, is in a very blunt way of saying this, is that these companies respond to brute force. So we want to go back to them with very clear guidance and a very clear framework for how they can operate here and have that be established the law of the land mm-hmm. as best as we possibly can,
right.
Rather than go down the sort of Wild Wild West route that we've, you know, gone Uber or Lyft. That, because what we also are concerned about is the companies, frankly, just end running jurisdictions and going directly to the state. And,
right. And we don't want that to happen.
In a Dillon Rule state, we could certainly be told how they will operate.
I think that's one of the important points in the NACDO guidance for cities is that they are helping cities have consistent guidance to these companies because the companies are operating all across the country. And so the more consistency that they're seeing from jurisdictions, the more they're willing to abide by those rules. Yeah. So I think that's it's really helpful guidance from that association.
Yep.
And then I have one,
yes, Commissioner
one more question, which is related to where these vehicles will be able to be used. So we already know that in Arlington, they're not permitted on the trails. We know that the National Park Service, they're not permitted on the trails, but in both jurisdictions, they're just not going to enforce. Is that the intent in Alexandria, or are we going to allow them to be used on trails as well as in bike lanes, the scooters in particular, as well as the roads and sidewalks, except for where? So currently the regulation is bicycles are not permitted in the business area. Are we going to change that to reflect that scooters also would not be permitted on the sidewalk in the King Street corridor?
I think that's something we need to discuss. If we were to ban scooters in the same places where bicycles are banned on the sidewalk, we would have to update code and update the signage and be very clear about that. I think those are some conversations that we can have with the community during the
I would certainly be prepared for that because, as you know, people are already upset that bicycles that ride 6 miles an hour on the sidewalk and you get a scooter that's going 15 miles an hour, it's going to be kind of a nasty thing. But back to the trails and the bike lanes also, this code had to be changed to allow the motorized vehicles on the trails in Alexandria.
So we have discussed with Parks and Recreation, it's not as clear here whether we would completely not allow them. It's something we're going to be looking at through the pilot.
Okay. So again, one of the problems is that we then, if we say they're not allowed, and yet people are on there because there's nobody to enforce, then what you're going to get is that feedback from the public saying these are just people who ignore every law known to mankind. And it just further inflames people who perhaps have an opinion of not wanting these at all, as opposed to making it clear what is legal, I think would help the process a little bit.
And making it reasonable,
yeah,
what is legal. Because even the fact that electric bikes aren't allowed on the trail system is ridiculous when we know some people commute to work by electric bike and they ride responsibly and they're not, they're not flouting the law. They're just trying to get to work and that's the trail system. So they're going to keep riding to work.
So I would just make sure that that's part of how you guys are talking about this and trying to set up different kind of expectation that, everyone's just breaking laws, and I don't think that's what you want with a pilot. I think we want it to be a good, successful, because it really does add a whole new component to transportation.
And there, other cities are experimenting with different regulations in their agreements with the vendors regarding speed limits, so that's something that we could consider. And we're looking at other cities to see how that's working and what they're doing and having those conversations.
Any other questions from the commissioners?
I have one.
Oh, yes.
I was interested in knowing, kind of following up on what Casey said, and I know it's not having the enforcement and thinking of the regulation side of things, but what about, I don't know where in the customer service requirements or what role the companies can play in enforcing or reinforcing and the outreach part to the customer, because I do think that is the key piece that I still haven't figured out in my head, what other jurisdictions are doing, and probably some of the lessons learned that DC had, it becomes kind of a little bit of chaos because there's a lot of people who have, maybe they don't ride to work, and this is very new to them, and it is fun. So the safety component of it, as well as the etiquette of where to park, but how can, what role the city will be playing on educating people on how to do that, you should be wearing a helmet potentially, and you need to go on this side of the road, not the other, and just as a seasoned cyclist, I see a lot of, I feel like I'm anecdotally see a lot more of the Capital Bike Share riders maybe riding the wrong side down a one-way street and those sorts of things, because I think that they're new to the riding on the city and they don't remember the rules that they might have learned or never learned as a kid. So I'm wondering where the education component comes in and how, if there's any opportunity within the pilot permitting part. I'm not real familiar of what you can put in there, and if there's anything from the guidelines or some of the permits, the example cities that have done to troubleshoot some of that.
Yeah, I mean, having an education component is something we've been putting.
I'm sorry if I missed that.
Right, for community engagement ongoing during the pilot, it is education and it's an education campaign, and we don't know exactly what that's going to look like yet, but we are aware and we'll be educating the public on the rules of the road and the etiquette and the how to park the bike properly or the scooter or where it should go. So that's a big component, and I believe there are things that the vendors are doing
as
well.
Actually in the MOUs, the draft MOUs that we looked at, there's real specific guidance about what the vendors, how they have to communicate with their clients, both on their websites and mobile apps. One thing we're talking about is how much information goes on the vehicles themselves. Obviously, these are vehicles that are going to be going all over the place, so we can't, it's Alexandria, we can't come in and, you know, say we want to drive the train, but we agree, we think it's really important to not to for the companies to be proactive, put the information on the devices, let people know, but also the city plays a role, and we would have an FAQ site, we would have the ability. One thing we've talked about is we want to drive people and to express concerns to the companies and have those companies report that data to us, but we also want our public to feel like they can contact the city, use the Call, Click, Connect system to let us know, hey, I saw this, this is a problem. Are you, as a city, relaying that back to the company? There's got to be a little bit of back and forth there. So,
one of the problems is that, you know, reaching the tourist or somebody from somebody else, some other location, or who isn't using the website. So I think coming in, having to come through the vendor's app
as much as possible,
a spot on perfect way to kind of push that that message. Because again, there's citizenry who are going to have an expectation that all of this behavior should be controlled by either city staff or volunteers to model the perfect behavior for these people who we have no control
over. Yeah. Anecdotally, the apps do have quite a bit of very specific guidance in there, and that vendors take responsibility for making sure that the app is showing the location-specific information, like don't ride on the sidewalks where it's not legal kind of thing, and they'll tailor it. But how many people watch the whole the whole like tutorial versus skip through it or go straight to rent the thing and hop on and see what happens?
Right. You got to go in and you got to hit, you got to sort of follow and go to safety. Oh, I really want, you have to really
I also had a question about the threshold. I like the idea of limiting it and, you know, this rolled us out slowly instead of being total chaos and swarming us with devices. But I was also thinking about the way these function is you don't want to have six different apps on there, or maybe you do, but maybe you'll know a little bit better than me on having maybe used them. But I picture somebody, if you're not visibly seeing them, or you go on there and there's one or two scooters in the city or nearby to you, then it's probably not going to be practical. So I don't know how you come up with that number where it's actually very useful for each company. So, I mean, a thought for me, and maybe I'm wrong about this, would be like to have less companies but let them have more vehicles per company or something, just to allow people to really see them and have them accessible when they're stepping out the door, that like, oh, there's a scooter there. Because what you were talking about, like, where how do you use these things? Like, well, if you go out and you used it, and then you step out of the CVS and it's gone already because it's the only one within a short distance, I could see that being, you know, something that for just usability and affecting what, you know, the consumer's experience.
Right. So there's certainly, you know, a number that the company has to be able to provide a certain number, or it's not worth it for them.
Okay, so they know that number already, I guess.
But there's also, there's also, I know on Transit app, I assume they still do, because I haven't actually looked at it recently, all of them were showing up on one app. And so you'd have to go and rent one from its own, you know, this specific app. But when I was in D.C. and I looked at Transit app, and all the different color bikes showed up as a different color dot. So
They're way ahead of me.
they are thinking through that.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes, Councilman Chapman.
To jump onto that question, I think that was a good idea. I think when we were having our briefing, I guess I couldn't get a sense of how many companies are interested in doing the pilot at the same time. I think it would be neat to, have two or three period down if that's possible. I don't know the possibility of that, to kind of start out and see, because I do think that could be an issue. I think it's a little bit harder to have five or six companies and everybody trying to figure out what's what when you have such a, even for the city, I think we're going to be trying to figure out where our hot spots are, where the mm-hmm. spots where it's not taking off as fast. But I think by having more companies, I think you'll lose a little bit of that, because of course, if I'm hooked into Lime, I'm going to be doing Lime as much as I can, because they're going to have a special or whatever that's going to
take your baseball.
Or $5 off or whatever it is.
Yeah.
When I was in Seattle, and that's kind of my example I keep using, they had two different ones. I can't remember the name of the other one. One was green, one was yellow. and you had a choice between those two, and they had them. They had them everywhere. I think that was good in terms of, seeing stuff. But as I talked to staff, I think a big thing that kind of turned me off was, I think people just, and this is, has nothing to do with the company. It's frankly, it's just people's own mindset or how they value it or not value it. Some people would just leave them in the middle of sidewalks, and so people would just be forced to walk around them because they're locked bikes and whatever. And so, figuring out how we create that culture, kind of through the pilot and after the pilot, is kind of what I want to see or try to figure out. I think they can definitely be a benefit to another option that people can have. I'm definitely interested in kind of the conversation, how the conversation will go around parks and trails and things like that. I don't, I guess I would have to find out more about why we wouldn't allow them, especially if we believe they're gonna be a commuter option. I know we have some members of council that might see things a different way, which is fine, but I think we need to make sure that option is at least available during the pilot, but then again, how do you turn it off if it's not the thing, best thing? It's a challenge.
I just want to say my experience so far in being involved in conversations around this is that one of the biggest concerns is speed and the etiquette around using the devices. And the trick is that, actually, I think your point is well taken. There are a lot of what I'll call newbies using the scooters who were never bicyclists before. And I think that, on the one hand, that's a really good thing, mm-hmm. because what e-bikes and the e-scooters will allow us to do is bridge what has been a pretty large gap between people who are going to drive and people who are going to bike, and never the twain shall meet. But there's actually a lot of the interested but concerned and or otherwise folks who wouldn't feel confident about bicycling, maybe because it's too much, it's too far, too hard, too many hills, whatever. But when they have motor electric assist, it becomes accessible to them. But that means they're not as well-versed in etiquette. They might not make the best decisions that are polite to the other users of the road or the trail system. And when it comes down to it, it's not about whether it's motorized or not. It's about how people use the device. And in a meeting in Arlington, a police officer participant in that meeting pointed out that they're responsible for technically, checking out and dealing with injuries on the trails. Like, they get called to the trail because there's been a crash or something like that, and it's not necessarily going to be because of a motorized vehicle. A bicyclist can go really fast on the trail, can go faster than they're allowed to go on the road or on the trail, and it's just as dangerous. It's not the motor, it's the choice of how that person is behaving. And if we can bring it back to that, then it's not so much about alienating or otherwise over-regulating a particular kind of device. It's about how we figure out how to all share the road together.
And Mr. Chair, if I might, I don't want to keep interjecting. One thing I wanted to address the questions about the number.
All your
of
comments
companies.
Are very much appreciated by the audience.
I think one of the things that staff is trying to evaluate is that we, in terms of the number of companies, if we only provide to a couple of different companies, we need to be careful that we don't allow the two companies to come in that are the beta of the, or the perhaps mm-hmm. the pang, maybe I should not say the pango of the app, of the e-bike and like that. So I, that's just one thing that we want to be careful of, having been there. That's why I'm here.
Any other questions or concerns?
One more comment, actually. Kind of switching gears a little bit on the data part of it. I can get really excited about thinking of different things that you could try to collect. But just from the being an environmental liaison, I just wanted to bring out the idea of trying to insert some measures or metrics or something in there for how it's helping the city environmentally. And I'm such a proponent for the idea of having different alternative modes of transportation. But it is a little confusing. I don't know where the line is. Like when you're having to go around and collect 30 different vehicles, they have to drive around and pick up a bunch of vehicles and then keep moving them, redistributing. I imagine it still comes out better for the city to have reduced the single occupancy vehicles and have more people directionally correct, using these other modes. And then in the long run, I feel like more people will get out of their cars and walk and scooter and everything else. But I just would like to consider how we can collect information on how the mapping goes or how they're distributing it and how they're using it over time, if it's really helping us as much as we think it is. I'd be interested to know if that's the case.
Just a few observations and maybe two questions, since I think we've covered some of them before. Are these vehicles subject to traffic signals, adherence to traffic signals? Okay, scooters and the electric bikes, okay. I think providing alternate opportunities for transportation is important. Of course, that's one of the functions that we serve here as members of the commission, to provide that input to staff. Your point was well taken with respect to it's the driver and the operator and their behavior that really makes the difference. However, from my experience in working in the district, I'll say my reference point would be Pennsylvania Avenue and 17th Street. There is a lot of very risky behavior being demonstrated by both electric bicycle operators and scooter operators, which around 515, one pass speed, probably around 20 miles per hour on the sidewalk. Can't say they're really watching because they're weaving in and out, and wouldn't have been a problem if someone maybe turned while they were moving and there would have been a strike. Consistent with the city's Vision Zero program, which is very important. We adopted it. The city has adopted it and embraced it. I'd like to ask the city, when they come back to it with us next month with a proposal, if there are going to be any restrictions placed into the program with respect to controlling the speed. I understand it's all software-based. Will we be making that a requirement, or will the current maximum authorized speed, which could be in excess of 15, some people say you can get to 20 even on a flat surface, to me, that's inconsistent with the city or with the city's Vision Zero program, because it allows this aberrant behavior. Whether or not we will allow them to be used on sidewalks or restrict them to bicycle lanes or city streets, I think would be important to be able to identify. And again, I have not seen much enforcement of traffic signal adherence by bicyclists, city law enforcement, but. Is there going to be any type of component within the educational program to address that? And again, I go back to the basic premise and the essential elements of Vision Zero. It's a great system, but it's interesting to watch the behavior on the east side of 17th Street, which is where the new executive office building is, that's lined with uniformed Secret Service police. One was stopped because he got a bit too close to the guard dog, whereas on the west side, they're sipping around like crazy. So it needs to be controlled like anything. Of course, we rely on our motor vehicle operators to adhere to 25 miles per hour within Old Town, and we know that doesn't happen. So it's important that we set some standards. But I would like to see these items being addressed within the proposal when you come back next time. Thank you. Anything else before we close this item out and move to the next item on the agenda? Number six, the Highway Safety Program funding.
Good evening. I know a couple of you, but for those who don't know me, I'm Alex Carroll. I work with the Transportation Planning Division, and the purpose of this agenda item is to request the Commission's endorsement of a grant application for the Route 1 South Median Refuge Island. And so I'm going to go over the funding source that we're seeking a little bit, and then talk a little bit about the project as well. So we're seeking funds. We're looking to seek funds from the Highway Safety Improvement Program, or HSIP. This is a federal aid program that's administered nationwide by the Federal Highway Administration and in the state of Virginia by VDOT. And the purpose of this program is to reduce traffic fatalities and serious injuries. There are several sub-programs under HSIP. There's the Highway Safety Program, the Bicycle and Pedestrian Safety Program, Highway Rail Grade Crossing Safety Program, and Local Agency Safety Program. The specific program that we are looking to get funds from is the Highway Safety Program. And so then just a little bit about that, some of the basics. It's a 90% federal share program with a 10% local share. VDOT covers that 10% local share, so any projects funded through this program are completely funded. The City of Alexandria can request up to $5 million under HSP or up to 4 projects. And eligible projects include any that have a relevant safety purpose, that address hazardous situations, that are data-based, that there's a demonstrated need for the project, and that it complies with the existing strategic highway safety plan emphasis areas. So the strategic highway safety plan is something that the state adopts every few years and identifies some emphasis areas where they feel like they need to prioritize their efforts. So as long as the project falls in line with one of those emphasis areas, then it's an eligible project. And so the application in particular, again, is for the Route 1 South Median Refuge Island. This project was identified in the South Patrick Street Housing Affordability Strategy, which was just recently approved by council. And so this would be a step in implementing some of the recommendations from that plan. The request is for approximately $2.5 million for the 2020 to 2025 6-year improvement program. The proposed project is to expand the existing 4-foot median, concrete median, on Route 1 South between Jefferson Street and Wolf Street to about 10 to 12 feet and include some landscaping. And the goals of this project are multiple. One, this would obviously add some character to the street where it may be lacking, create a gateway into one of the southern entrances to the city. It would also serve as a traffic calming measure, adding street trees, expanding the median, and thereby having to narrow the adjacent travel lanes with calm traffic. And it would also give a better opportunity for pedestrians looking to cross Route 1 to have a refuge whenever they're trying to cross, so they can just take one side of traffic at a time. And so this project would be consistent with some of our existing plans. Again, I already mentioned the Route 1 South Housing Affordability Strategy, but also with our Vision Zero Action Plan. Route 1 is one of our high KSI or high crash corridors that was identified in the Vision Zero Action Plan, and the approach or some of the treatments that are being used is consistent with what's been identified in our Pedestrian and Bicycle Master Plan, as well as our Complete Streets Design Guidelines. And then so here are just a couple of different sketches. You've probably seen a few of these before. This is an excerpt from the Route 1 South Housing Affordability Strategy presentation. Here's just an example cross-section of what that segment of the corridor could look like. So where there's an existing 4-foot concrete median, it would be expanded to 10 to 12 feet and include landscaping, including street trees. And the adjacent travel lanes would then be narrowed to accommodate that expansion. And then again, here's the project location. So keeping it fairly brief with my presentation so that you all can have any discussion, the recommended action is that the commission endorses this grant application and then recommends to City Council that they also endorse the application. The application is due by November 1st.
Any questions on the presentation content? Commissioner Kane.
Alex, I have one question on, if you go back, I think it's 2 slides to the,
sure. Here.
So what would be, it's hard to tell what you're planning. The proposal is to reduce the widths, travel lane widths to?
Right, so that hasn't been identified yet because the proposed median island is anywhere between 10 and 12 feet. So depending on what the final design is for the width of the median island, it would then extend into the travel lanes. So that would be identified through the design process.
But there would be no encroachment on the sidewalk side?
No, the curb is going to stay as is.
Curb is fixed. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Any other questions?
Can I just make sure that I clarify? In the plan, as the development occurs on Route 1, the development, in association with the development, we would see improvements from the curb side to the developments themselves. So additional improvements would be made.
Yeah, I was mostly concerned that somehow we weren't going to be squeezing down the getting cars even closer to the sidewalk. So that's...
Yep.
Any other questions or comments before we move to consideration of the item? Okay. Do I have a motion to accept the proposal as submitted by staff?
Second.
And I just want to add that this is really exciting because we just finished a plan that had this as a key piece, and now you guys are all teed up to do a really excellent, what I think is a really excellent application. And I think the community is going to send you little Valentines, hopefully, if you get them. If you get the money. Well, because this is, as Commissioner Brown pointed out earlier tonight, community members had a lot of heartburn about this plan, and a lot of it stemmed around infrastructure issues, transportation infrastructure being one of them, in accommodating more people in the neighborhood and not properly dealing with the traffic impacts. And while the staff have done a great job doing interim, short-term, small-scale improvements that you've been able to roll out even as the plan was being finished, this is a biggie that I think is really going to improve the experience in this neighborhood. So I wish you all the best of luck.
I guess that would be my question. Do you have an idea of your chances of getting this grant granted?
It's hard to say because it's a data-driven program. So they prioritize based on a number of factors, but among them including the number of crashes on that corridor and whether or not the proposed improvements can actually reduce those crashes. And it's all very statistical and data-driven. Given that this is one of our high crash corridors, I do think that it has a pretty good chance, but then also considering that Alexandria has relatively few crashes compared to other areas of the state, it could also be a little bit lower on the totem pole, so we'll kind of see how it shakes out.
And depending on competition.
Yeah.
Price is right, though.
Have we been successful at securing this grant before? And if so, what's an example?
The last one that we've received was for the Seminary Howard intersection improvements.
Getting back to the task at hand, I know we had a motion that was started by the Vice Chair, but I think...
do you
want to
read the motion?
Okay. So we have the official record straight.
Okay. I move to endorse the fiscal year 2020, fiscal year 2021 Highway Safety Program funding request and recommend City Council consideration and approval at the October 23rd, 2018 legislative session.
And I second that.
Okay. Commissioner Brown seconds. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? And then motion carries. Thank you. Just got a bit ahead of ourselves, but it's important that we realign ourselves.
Question.
Yes, Commissioner Brown.
Alex?
I'm sorry, say it one more time.
If the city doesn't get this, will the city make some attempt to find money somewhere else?
Yes. I think the project is identified as a priority in the plan, so there are... If this doesn't work, as we do with other projects, we go back out, and we also, Council will also have the opportunity to consider a future budget process.
Okay. As far as other business, we have a joint meeting of the Alexandria Transit Commission and the Transportation Commission next Thursday, the 27th, beginning at 6:30. That'll be in the Sister Cities Conference Room downstairs. And we also have the ATC stakeholder meeting scheduled for September 29th. I believe that's Saturday. And I don't recall the start time of that. Does anyone know the...
9 a.m.
And the location?
Yes. And so that is, you know, I remind commissioners that that event is not public. So only invited commissioners will be attending. And I have already spoke to them.
Okay, you've got the arrangement.
Yes.
Okay.
Commissioner, that's the one that Commissioner McMahon and I volunteered.
Okay, I just want to make sure we were square with
having
that. Is that going to duplicate the discussion on Thursday night in some sense?
I don't know the detail, but I wouldn't think so.
Yeah, I think it's going to get a lot more in-depth. Yeah.
Well, we'll do it twice.
Yeah.
Right, and the joint meeting,
it's important, they'll repeat
is it covering again. Just, is it just about the transit vision, or
yes.
Is it, okay.
Just
okay.
Yeah.
We'll just go over that.
That's the flyer
package. Yeah. So if either Commissioner Marsh or Commissioner Gaskins could let Ramiro know who would be the best person to take over PIMEG, I'd be glad to be able to pass that on to
you. Can
you
give the day of the week again?
Oh, it is next Wednesday at 6:30. At the Houston Recreational Center.
I just want to, my calendar's not always the best, but I have 7. So maybe we should just, I'm going to double check that real quick.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm going to check it real quick.
Is it like every third Wednesday or something?
Oh, I'm sorry, 7.
7, okay,
yes,
good.
Yes, it is 7. And I believe it's for the following months, it also begins the 7, same location.
It's every month.
Right now, I have an October and a November date that
first
Steve Cindy
is not. So it is at the, we have 2 members of council on the PIMEG, so we are checking with their,
it's not a regular day,
schedule
it varies.
First, and then we work with other members of PIMEG. We have not established a regular rotation for those meetings. And what I would just quickly add is that the way that PIMEG, we anticipate that PIMEG will work this time around is that there will be monthly meetings through adoption of the development special use permit for the changes to the metro station, and then PIMEG is going to operate more as a body that provides communications and oversight during the construction process. So the frequency of the meetings will, I think they'll ebb and flow is what it's fair to say.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. And I'm not sure if everyone got the message, but I would be remiss if I didn't share the experience that Commissioner Gonzalez experienced while he was riding his bicycle. He's doing better. He just wasn't able to come to the meeting today, but he was involved in a bicycle-to-bicycle collision, as I understand it. But if you would care to send him an email of encouragement, I think he would very much appreciate that. But he was unable to make it today because he's still in the recovery mode, but he had some significant injuries as a result of that.
An example where speed mattered and it wasn't because of a motor.
There was considerable energy involved in that collision, and yes, it doesn't necessarily take a motor vehicle. 2 bicycles will...
Trailer Street.
Handle ribs just unfortunately fine. It caused significant damage to his body. Anyway, any other business before we have a motion to adjourn?
I just wanted to mention one thing to the commission. Our November meeting is very close to the holiday. And so it would be on the 21st of November. It's the day before. So
does the one hang out with us on Wednesday night?
You want to?
We can begin an early Thanksgiving celebration. Will that work for everyone? Since people may be on travel because of vacation.
No, I'm just kidding. We're not going to actually.
Oh, it's not even up for.
No. Yeah, did we establish already, or did we?
We haven't discussed it.
Yeah, I think.
Just looking to push it up possibly a week.
I was going to ask if everyone
that makes
has the ability to do that.
That's a conflict for you, Mr. Chair.
Well, I do the back-to-back, but I'll go
you've
from
done
one
it,
to the other.
Done it before, that's right.
Done the back-to-back shuffle. If we move it in advance a week for the Transportation Commission, the DASH meeting would be right before that, so it would be 5:30 to 7:30, that I would have to leave early to make the 7 o'clock and readjust.
Let's order pizza.
I just bring a power bar and I'll be fine.
But then you have a free night.
There's always a benefit to every outcome. I like your positive outlook. I try to do that myself. So we'll be looking at moving it from the 21st to the 14th. If there's anyone that can't make that, please do let us know. But it looks right now everyone seems to be okay with that. All right. Ramiro, if you could make that change.
I will update.
Thank you for that. Okay. Do I have a motion to adjourn?
I'll make a motion to adjourn.
And we have a second.
I'll second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All right.
Well, thank you, and enjoy the rest of your evening, and a safe rest of the week.
Okay.
Yeah, it was pretty intense.
Yeah. Tuesday.
I live very close.
I'm on the other side of the tracks.
Yeah, broke a couple ribs.